This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Private Equity Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by James Anderson. James is the co-founder, managing director of Clearview Capital. He's going to talk to us about his career, how he got started, Clearview, and a few points of pride, areas to specialize, and a little bit more. James, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Hi, yes, thank you, Scott. I'm James Anderson, co-founder, managing partner at Clearview Capital. I've been doing this now in private equity for about 21 years. Started off actually maybe in an unusual way in that I was an undergraduate engineer, spent 3 years working for Schlumberger in Egypt, of all places, as a wireline engineer before going to business school. And then after business school, spent about 6 years in strategy consulting with Mars & Co., which is a Boston Consulting Group spinoff, doing consulting work in the U.S. and Europe, and then quit that job, trying to figure out what I wanted to do next, and ended up at a small private equity shop in Greenwich, Connecticut. And then three and a half years after that, started Clearview Capital.
And what was it like? I mean, obviously, you've got some of the background, the credentials of somebody who would be a great private equity founder and so forth. You know, you both business degree, several years at a top-notch consulting firm, engineering background, which shows, you know, typically very bright, lots of diligence and so forth. I mean, some fascinating other spots working in Egypt and so forth. But what was it like starting your own fund? How did you guys get started?
Well, you know, my partner, Cal Nider, and I worked together for about 2.5 years at another shop. And we, for a number of reasons, we liked some things about that place, but decided that we wanted to go off on our own. And so we did a lot of business planning and then decided we could go do this ourselves. And we quit, went out on our own, and in 2 weeks kind of threw that business plan out, which I think is how most businesses actually get started. And we just decided that we would try to do deals on a deal-by-deal basis, which we were fortunately able to do. And then over time, built up the firm to get to a committed fund. But, you know, when we started, I think, quite honestly, I had done very little in the way of deal making, because when I came into private equity, I was really brought in to work exclusively on improving an existing portfolio. So my background is a little unusual in that I didn't know my way around a balance sheet, quite frankly, and had to learn it. And then over time became a deal guy, but that's not really where I started.
And let me ask you a couple of questions about that. So instead of having a committed fund to start with, it was more almost like an independent sponsor model, not by design, but how you ended up. And then a committed fund later. When you were first getting going and kind of short on capital, didn't have a committed fund, how did you sort of control legal diligence, Q of V expenses, those kinds of things? How did you work to manage that kind of stuff? And what kind of size deals were you looking at to get financed when you first got started?
My goodness. So when we started, I personally had 3 kids and $100,000 in the bank. So short on capital is exactly what we were. And we kind of flailed around. We were able to find our first deal and then found someone to back us who thought, wow, your team is interesting. And if you can find some good deals, maybe I'll put some money in some deals. And we did that. And honestly, we were fortunate to find an attorney, Stan Johnson at Loeb & Loeb, who was willing to essentially take a flyer on us. And because we couldn't, broken deal expenses weren't a thing we could really afford. Honestly.
Yes, exactly.
But
Loeb & Loeb is a serious firm.
Like I said, I'm sorry?
And Loeb & Loeb is a serious firm. I mean, a real firm.
Right, but Stan saw something in us and was willing to take a chance, and we ended up working with Stan for about 15 years and did a whole ton of deals with Loeb & Loeb. And, you know, they were there early for us, and without that, it would have been very difficult.
And what about when you started to move towards having a committed fund? Was the concept at that point, oh my God, it'll be easier to build a portfolio, easier to do this, knowing we have capital ready with us versus the independent sponsors model? And do you ever go back and forth on that? And when you start with a committed fund, you know, people are always interested. What do I need? How much money do I need to start a committed fund? And of course, it depends if you're doing Blackstone type deals or mid-market deals or what you're trying to do. But a couple thoughts on committed fund versus independent sponsor, how much money, and you don't have to give me exact sort of just ballpark of what you were thinking about when you started a committed fund and some of the reasons why you wanted to have a committed fund.
Well, when we started, really was a deal-by-deal basis, but after doing three deals, which was literally find a deal, go find money, we organized what we call a pledge fund, where we had 16 individual investors who essentially bought an option in us. So they paid us some fees for the right, but not the obligation to invest in the deals we showed them. But it was a way to have some money to start building the firm and hire people, because we needed some income to build infrastructure to be a real firm. And that all sounded great, but let me tell you, you get 16 rich people in a room and you can guarantee they won't agree on anything. So it turned out to be a really cumbersome way to operate. So we did do four deals that way, but we decided that to avoid the distraction and the worry, and we actually lost a couple of deals because we couldn't prove to the seller that we had the capital to do the deal. One deal, for example, United Site Services, was a deal that we had signed up that went on to many iterations of glory. we had the deal, but we couldn't really speak for the equity, and the seller balked and moved away and went with somebody else. So we had to get to a committed fund, and we probably started raising that fund before we really had the track record to do it, but we managed to get it done, but it solved so many problems and just made it much, much easier to operate.
Give us a sense, doesn't have to be exact, directionally size the fund originally, and then where did the money come from? Did it come from wealthy families, or did it come from traditional sort of pension funds and insurance companies? In raising the first fund, where does the money typically come from?
Well, we had individual backers, and most of them converted to the new fund. But primarily, it was a $250 million committed fund, which was, quite honestly, we were thrilled. That was a really big fund, we thought, at the time, given our track record. But still, the majority of the money came from institutional investors. And in fact, Credit Suisse, which was since become GCM Grosvenor, was there for us early. They made a big commitment as our first committed institutional investor. And with that, that really brought other institutional investors along. So I think that first fund was 80% institutional, maybe 20% individual.
And that's a serious first fund. I mean, that's not what you typically see. That's a real fund with real amounts and so forth. And talk to us a little bit further. Are there areas or niches that you specialize in today that you particularly focus in?
Well, we, in a world that has really become sector-focused, where limited partners typically want to see how deep your expertise is in an individual sector, we've remained generalists. We've been generalists from the beginning. And we like to say that what we specialize in really is helping teenage companies become adults. So these are companies with a lot of promise, growing fast, but they haven't necessarily built all the infrastructure they need or have all the management they need to double or triple in size from where they are. And that's what we specialize in, because we found that regardless of industry, whether it's healthcare or business process outsourcing or something else like that, that the kinds of issues these growth companies run into are the same. They're very similar. And that's really what our expertise is in helping these companies grow up and become really professional. Now, along the way, we've developed real expertise. For example, we've done 8 deals in healthcare services and have a really, really good track record in healthcare. We have long experience in building products and business process outsourcing. So along the way, we've been able to develop sector expertise, but we're still generalists. And our expertise is really helping build businesses.
And talk for a moment in healthcare. What areas or sectors in healthcare specifically?
Really services. So we don't do med tech and things like that, but we've invested in adult daycare, in hospice, in all kinds of different outsourcing within healthcare. We currently own 2 behavioral health companies that have been really, really successful. So it's really about services, and very often they're center-based services.
Fantastic. Well, what a great business you've built, and what a great fund you've built. Talk from any advice that you would give to somebody who is a professional investor in terms of trying to do this well and be successful? Any advice you'd give out to others?
Well, I guess one of the things that maybe is not obvious is I would say patience. The classic private equity model is to invest in a company and then rush to complete a 100-day plan. And we've never really taken that approach. We have a very clear plan of what we'd like to do when we start with an investment. But we found over the years that not making precipitous decisions, particularly when things are rough, and that happens a lot in these investments, has served us really well. We're just patient, because if you have a fundamentally good business that's having difficulty, and you know, we tell the joke all the time that we model everything, so that way we can know what won't happen, because it's really unpredictable what happens in business. So we've been very patient in how we deal with issues and with making changes, particularly at smaller businesses. So we do things incrementally rather than making revolutionary changes. And I think it's worked out very well with our own firm, where we've changed and evolved over time, but slowly, as well as with our portfolio companies.
Just a magnificent advice and story. You see people that act precipitously, and they're almost always wrong when they do so. The point you make on business plans is so true. Directionally, you pick the right business, pick the right managers, the right leaders, the right entrepreneurs, and then you try and figure it out from there is what it sounds like.
Exactly. You give them a little bit of time to get it right.
James, you and your colleagues have built a great fund, tremendous success. I mean, it's almost unheard of to build a $250 million initial fund, and then you've grown from there. You've obviously got great pride in what you've done at ClearView. Take a moment and talk about a few points of pride in what you've built in your whole team and the portfolio you've worked with. Give us a few points of pride.
Yeah, I guess I would say I'm most proud of, for example, we've built a company from scratch. We joke that Apple started in the garage. Our first office was actually above a garage. You know, we started from nothing. We built a really successful company where Preqin says that every one of our funds has been in the top quartile. I'm really proud of that. But we've also done it by building a reputation for honesty and integrity. And those things don't all that often go together. So I'm really proud of that, because it's not just about how much money you make, but how you do it. And that's really what's been most important to us. And I'm really proud of that. I think the second thing, because we've had some success, we've been able to help our management teams in our realized transactions create $500 million in wealth. That's a lot of money. It really is for people who are just hardworking business people, and not just the founders, but deep into the management teams who've made investments alongside us and through incentive plans and was able to create a lot of wealth. So we're very happy that we've been able to help them do that. And then the other way, on the transaction and company front, we've had a lot of great successes. Companies like Senior Care Centers of America, that is now the largest adult daycare provider in the country by far, and a company like ASIC, that's not a public company, a really, really well-known building products company. But like I said before about, you know, things don't generally go exactly as you plan them to, we've had a number of investments that were really challenged along the way. That's part of our business. And I guess I'm most proud of our ability to work through really difficult challenges to get to a successful result without bailing along the way. And one example I'll give is the first deal we ever did was a company called Via. They made office chairs. And we did all this diligence, and we looked back and we saw that the office furniture market had grown very nicely for 40 years, and the worst down year was 8%. And we thought, wow, not a particularly cyclical business. We invested on June 1st of 2000, and you can look back in the statistics, and literally from that day forward, the office furniture industry fell 40% in 18 months. So we had a really, really challenged investment. But we buckled down, we invested more money in the business, we tripled sales and marketing expenditures, and we got through it. And we ended up, and we made 2.5 times our money. That's not, you know, that's not an unbelievable home run, but in a way, it's I'm most proud of that one, because we were a zero and about ready to lose the company, but we stuck it out and it worked out well. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's the kind of thing I'm most proud of.
Well, and often it's the case that it's not the deal that made the most money. It's the deal that saw through the toughest times. It's the most rewarding and satisfying, even if not economically. What a great story. What a magnificent job, James, that you've done, that your partners have done, your portfolio companies have done in building both successful companies, but a great culture and great people. A pleasure visiting with you today and hearing more about the Clairvoyant Capital story. Thank you for joining the Becker Private Equity Podcast.
Thank you.